transient. I wrote several poems on this theme of riding the freight trains in the 30s, but this is the only one that came out any good. I wrote them for about 3 years, every summer, to Vancouver. Transient. Riding the boxcars out of Winnipeg in a morning after rain, so close to the violent sway of fields it's like running and running, naked with summer in your mouth. The guy right behind you grunts and says, "Got a smoke?" Being a boy is scarcely a moment, and you hear the rumbling iron roadbed singing under the wheels at night, and a door jerking open, mile after dusty mile, riding into Regina with a dust storm crowding behind you. A guy you hardly even spoke to nudges your shoulder chummily and says, "Got a smoke?" Riding into the Crow's Nest Mountains with your first beard itching and 100 hungry guys fanning out through the shabby whistle stops for handouts, and not even a sandwich for 200 miles. Only the high mountains and knowing what it's like to be not quite a child anymore, and listening to the tough men talk of women and talk of the way things are in 1937. Riding down in the spit-gray sea-level morning through dockyard streets and dingy dowager houses with ocean a jump away and the sky beneath you and puddles on Water Street. And an old Indian woman pushing her yawning, scratching daughter onto a balcony to yell at the boy man passing, "Want some fun? Come on up." And the girl just come from riding the shrieking bedspring bronco all the up and down night to a hitchpost morning, full of mothers and dirt and lice, and hardly the place for a princess of the Coast Salish. My dove, my little one, tonight there will be wine and the loins of a dozen men to pin you down in the outlying lands of sleep, innocent as a child, awaiting the last of all your bridegrooms. Stand in the swaying boxcar doorway, moving east away from the sunset, and after a while the eyes digest the country. The belly perceives a mapmaker's vision in dust and dirt on the face and hands here, its smell drawn deep through the nostrils, down to the lungs, and spurts through bloodstream, campaigns in the lower intestine, and chants love songs to the kidneys. After a while, there is no arrival and no departure possible anymore. You are where you were always going, and the shape of home has planted itself in your loins. The identity of force that were always nameless, the selfhood of rivers that are changing always, the nationality of riding a boxcar through the Depression, over long green plains and high mountain country, with the best and worst of a love that's not to be spoken. And a guy right behind you says then, "Got a smoke?" You give him one and stand in the boxcar doorway, or looking out the window of a Montreal apartment, or running machines in a Vancouver factory. You stand there, growing older. The old girlfriend. We made love in a park cemetery with useful youth. Jesus, I hate to flub that. The old girlfriend. We made love in a park cemetery with youthful uneasiness about the stationary dead. After marriage, I sat between them at a movie, holding hands with both, chuckling polygamous and evil at this beginning of having enough of women. Now my laughter at all myself includes our meeting at 40, the somnolent gossip of middle-aged certainties, though never now the goose girl wondering what came next and which hand was which and where, but never why in a parked car while the dead talk softly whatever the dead discuss. Never the goose girl now, nor gander lout from 1940. He made a jeweled baldric from a sweatshirt, and simmering flesh imperishable as grassroots, the silver bugle from a jalopy's horn that kept going yippee, yippee all night long in the catacombs of moonlight, among the tombs of tumescent corpses, until a dead spinster complained she couldn't sleep, and the old caretaker came. Helping my wife get supper. Something basically satisfying, real, and valid about being a husband. Brandishing a knife and cutting up soggy tomatoes. Not just red, but red all through. And there's something undeniably profound about being red all through. Like a cavalry charge in the salad. But I could get indignant at this lettuce for allowing itself to be sliced by somebody's husband like so much dead meat, not making a move to defend itself, just lying there limply, relying on being green. Not like the onion, which is not defenseless, for nobody makes friends with an onion, except another one, and then they don't trust each other, like two skunks. And the carrot's such a bright orange. It ought to be more than just a carrot, which anyway is a futile condition to be in. It might be better not to be a carrot, if you could manage to get out of it. Be warned beforehand. You were liable to be somebody's husband, but nobody ever is. Method for calling up ghosts. Walking sometimes in the streets of the town I live in, and thinking of all the people who lived here once, and fill the space I fill. If they'd painted white trails on the sidewalk everywhere they went, it would be possible to see them now. Imagine them as line drawings, and at once they become visible again. People crossing the empty streets at midnight, or during the rush hour, squeezed and overlapped by the living, before the lights change. And this method must be used to think of them, or they disappear when you look, and no one is there. This incident, sitting with friends in the chalet restaurant on top of Mount Royal, talking of a tree swaying back and forth in the wind, leaving no silvery whip marks of its traveling self, or proof of passage, we saying, that tree will always be there. Said in a commonplace tone, it doesn't sound exciting, but it is, oh it is. And something I've thought of every now and then, how everything we do or say has an effect somewhere, passes outward from itself in widening circles, a sort of human magic by which a word moves outside the nature of a word, the side effect of itself, the nature of a word being that when it's been said, it will always be said. A recording exists in the main deep of sound. And I think if there was a God somewhere, he'd be damn jealous. It's a morbid idea, perhaps, if you don't think it's ridiculous. So many line drawings of dead men, so many white trails on downtown streets. But I don't care much if it is, for it exalts me to think of those people passing by tonight in the room where I sit writing, on the roads that I will walk tomorrow, in the echoing rooms of yesterday. And I think of the first spaceship leaving Earth, going where men have never loved women, or lived and died there, in the marginless emptiness, until the pale death angel of Earth comes for us on the starships. That's the last poem of The Caribou Horses, published by McClellan and Stewart in 1965. This book is Pressed on Sand, published by the Ryerson Press in 1955. A chapbook. I don't have too high an opinion of some of the poems, but we'll go on. Pressed on Sand. The first poem is I See No Hand. I see no hand in the hand-shaped pressed on sand. No man in the tide-walking town of time could clamber from phoenix flesh or in any way extend. But the cup-pool reservoir of their blood, freighted about by bones like a moving lake, frames a reference of stars and cold suns. Beyond and past the reach of micro and telescope, their phalanx shines. A carried history sounds in separate parts, and sings in skeletons. Dust joins their graves. No priest pouts for souls unshriven, or starts red thoughts rolling through dead men's lives. I see them curled in caves and changed to chemic salts, lifting on hot gray pavements and charged with rain. You over there, collapsed on your awkward stilts. We shall run together again. I can see why I'm not too fond of some of them. Their imitation, that one was an imitation of Dylan Thomas. Freighter. Many of these were written in Vancouver. I was in Vancouver when it was published. Okay. Freighter. Most of these poems, practically all of them, were written in Vancouver. It was about the same time I wrote the first play, around October in 1955. And the first play was produced by CBC. I had to write a dozen more before they produced another. Freighter. Past the lion's gate, a light surrounded by lights, following white wakes that reached in a long, untraveling skein to the green gulf, and shore totems watched, the new paint on their faces cracked in a grin. The wives on shore and girls with pain lessening into trivial loss have all gone home, the last thought cast loose its line. At odd times the ships appear in life, arrive at table during the meat course, before the candied pears, are lost with Aldebaran when it's time for bed, under the white riveted stars. The empty ocean bearing them is a red morning birth, being barren again immediately. The small sounds blend into silent sailors, some with solemn faces, remembering the old pain of lost land. And the poet loaned himself to a ship's purposes, reaching into the land mind and the land tides fall, in a lunar synthesis of men and ships that I sailed once, and once forgot to sail. Okay. Yeah, okay. I don't think much of the poem, so I'm probably... Freighter. Past the lion's gate, a light surrounded by lights, following white wakes that reached in a long unraveling skein to the green gulf, and shore totems watched, the new paint on their faces cracked in a grin. The wives on shore and girls with pain lessening into trivial loss have all gone home, the last thought cast loose its line. At odd times the ships appear in life, arrive at table during the meat course, before the candied pears, are lost with Aldebaran when it's time for bed, under the white riveted stars. The empty ocean bearing them in a red morning berth, being barren again immediately, the small sounds blend into silent sailors, some with solemn faces, remembering the old pain of lost land. And a poet loaned himself to a ship's purposes, reaching into the land mind and the land tides fall, in a lunar synthesis of men and ships that I sailed once, and once forgot to sail. House guest. This has got a good line in it that I'd give anything to be able to extract it, but I can't. House guest. I have an artist in the house for 1 week, and expect to be discommoded, uncomfortable sometimes, for I know him, the effeminate child, with some stigmata of greatness that strikes violently at the world's hypocrisy, chill blue gleams of pure malignity, love soured and love grown old. I expect pastels on the floor, and numerous friends, and mincing swear words, and tentative veiled overtures without commitment, mild pronunciamentos that spend gusto like a miser's purse, and saves a bottom potential the mind will not decant. But what is the relationship? I must know why this pale man I've studied for 6 months, why his pictures live, when life returns again. Is there a difference, basically, underlying mine, like a Byzantine plinth, growing into another world, a gossamer one? Soliloquy. About a cat, by the way. I have found a master, I think, this lanky man with kind eyes, susceptible, but still not wholly deceived, a fool, perhaps, but wise. I am assured a place by the fire, a bed that I shall not use, access to the flat gray world without. I shall arch my back and press urgently against his legs. He might, in the condescension of Godhead, forget to cover the Sunday roast. He might turn out to be witless yet. In fact, I think I am suited here, and shall take a lover under the stair. but only the cold midwifery of the moon will know where the kittens are. Old Man Ostrom. He lived among the loud men without a word, knowing he did not know, perhaps, and keeping silence in wise ignorance. His double shadow slips between the dwindling hardwood piles, the prone bodies of trees. The town housewives behind their windows watched him unamiably. The silver axe that represents his soul moved off in the late spring. I thought him so, and sometimes thus. I'm almost certainly wrong. He lived in childhood's linked dreams as background for play and talk, moving through indelible unimportance, inevitably, to work. Remembered as seen, but added to, increased somehow in later knowledge, this man, administrator of the sun's estates, executor of the moon. Now I find him dead, and oddly hear his first protests in some vast place, and stammering his challenge to omnipotence. And listening, I have found my voice. Good many S's in there, too. One called Far Traveler. Really romantic. What have you brought from Venice and the Bell City of Canton? Kowloon and the Cairo bazaars. The streets you ranged in search of a state of mind. Are your thoughts grown tranquil? How have you changed? Flower porcelain and the delicate pottery of Peking, cradled in yellow fingers, an eastern shop. Is it enough that you found in your long, far traveling? When will you stop? Have you rolled the moonlight into a small white bundle and stored it? Do you remember at all a Spanish sailor peeling an orange and wearing silver earrings on a brown sea wall? What have you brought from Naples? What words have you spoken with tempered lips and level eyes estranged from the tall, temperate mountains and the prairie? How have you changed? Old creeks. Seasonal malady. April has been feminine to my masculine mood. Impersonal solicitude. Maternal mannerisms ad nauseam. She finds me standing by a nude painting in a city museum, knowing a grim satisfaction in dead delights and live sorrows. She weaves new robes for naked trees and moonless nights, with Puritan zeal, and probes the ghost of pain until it grieves. An incestuous murmuring of leaves and startled moonlight, stirred by a neuter wind, remembering antique frost. And love is only an unfortunate word, with its meaning lost. I will create an artificial hunger in my heart, abandon all the little laws by which we sicken gradually. And when we part, I will survive my love's indifferent menopause. In a far city or a forgotten book, the tension in a woman's look is tangible and may be found above a mountain silence or the clatter of cities, meet in midair and shatter the crystal sound. Barriers. Incapable of tenderness, the sea reaches a coit of rock and stares at unpossessed land, stone and stone towers where slant sun splashes the man-houred buildings. Time will not bend backwards again, boomerang sure in the dusk of our fate, plowing the atom under lava floods with arrows and flint artifacts. And the child of the shapeless gender, procurers of doom, a slippery madam, counting her changed children, she keeps green shore vigil, places improbable totems of tides and phosphorus and rotting ships. Backward over the wide weed wilderness, black kraken country, and occasional tongued escarpments, remembering genesis of royal Jesus. Backward over the wide weed wilderness, black kraken country, and occasional tongued escarpments, remembering genesis of royal prophetic thunder and red rainfall. The quivering man-seed turned away from water, spurned sand, mud silence, planned unseen long land projects, broke Weed Ford's fetter, emerged eventually ultramarine. The same remembering sea looks over shores of dyke green islands and sleeping clover country, pours under bridges and glimmers in factory flares. Storms, sighs, subsides at last, denied entry. The old salt mother, her green wood-screened approaches, her seated shores, relinquished titles move in geologic slumber. Her grown child touches the known face of a woman and desperately makes love. On with romance. Anamitapoik people. Dog with red eyes and woman with moon on her shoulder. All the delicate, shining, dark vowel designations pass into the keeping of books and bards and the soft sighing alders. Enter inanimate things and murmur forever under mnemonic glass. Girl with sandstone hair and running antelope on the prairie. They have forgotten the twisting teepee smoke in the sky. Finder of birds has forgotten the fluted pipestone quarry. Firemaker has left no coiled blue dreams in the clay. All the catapult living words are mated to strangers, altered on stupid tongues to suit dull towns. Antelope pelts worked over with coppery fingers, changed to foppish suits and frippery feminine gowns. Hater of lies has vanished, cave hunter gone, an arrow lender, leaving their tongued miracles like a leaf smoke burn and smart, peering into the trance green rooms like a lost bystander's, into the long palavers and red parliaments of the heart. Lovers in the park, in the moon's extravagance and the almost jewels of streetlights, nothing happened at all. What should happen to lovers? Quarrels, recriminations, tears that fall in glassy buckets. No interest attaches to happy lovers. Let them wail and beat their breasts. The moon watches like a curious silver ball that is really gray stone and soft pumice. Crack the fellow's chins and kick his teeth askew, and then their promise to love each other will not lack sufficient reasons. But ah, they gaze like calves at the other's image, till dawn and dew and the merely pretty rose, and the moon shrunk to common coinage. Meander. Some day when I am old, no use to anyone, an exile from the beloved factories of my youth, I think I will write the truth, and follow the sun into the mountains, and moan a little about the infirmities of age. A dog-eared scribbler at my hip, and a reasonable tone for dogs and their justifiable rage at the old tramp with a whiskered lip. We'll find a story in every rock along the Fraser, write everything, perhaps not well. But someone has to write about the Indian dock at Rupert, the dreamlike murmuring of lonesome water closets in a deserted hotel, the minutiae and trivia that people think is unimportant, the red blink in the eye of a grizzly dying as he fell, the flat stare in the trapper's eyes when death came near. I think it's well that someone should tell the truth, and the most enjoyable lies. If the atom gods allow, I would like to be a dirty, unkempt old man, creating a drunken row for no good reason, and chuckling now and then beneath a greasy coat of tan. And death shall come by with a roguish caper to take my attention, a gesture of infinite glee, and the old man who died on the street, in your morning paper, that will be me. This is one of the few poems, this next one, that I like in this book, and it's been revised. For the record, I think you can imagine that as an old lady talking. In the past 3 days, I've gone to the door for milk, and the bottle's been full of blood, deep claw marks on the hardwood floor, and a rather smelly sort of mud making a mess of the hall. I'm convinced it isn't usual, and yesterday I phoned the dairy to see if they'd changed their policy. And I must say, the man who answered was extremely rude, as if he would like to strike me with a random adjective or an impulsive noun. You know, I'm convinced that someone doesn't like me. As a young man, he is flawed, the artist, using genius on street corners. in rain and no rain, which is the place where rain might be, under the sun's red stain. And passers-by stare at him oddly, contribute to his insulated world, his necessary hunger and artificial fever, constructed of thin lips curled at parental admonitions and scorn of time, that has a mild glory attached, I think, foregoing the balanced certainty of work, and seeking apertures, a loose chink in the wall of understanding. And here is the artist as a young man, endowed with death and bodily infirmities, in his own way magnificent. He can capture an illusion and hold the gray street in his arms without surprise, reenact tribal genesis on canvas, restore lost Eden in his hollow eyes. And past him swirls the town, the people, incurious, unquestioning, and apart from any moral considerations, the leitmotif of a brushstroke or a heart. Mary the Allen. This continues the romantic trend. How can I break through the centuries and bring this girl to you? I'll break through. She was reality as much as the silver myth of a movie star, as much as obsequious waiters in any cocktail bar. She was flesh and utter loveliness 1,000 years ago, a dark-browed Allen girl but seldom seen in the narrow alleyways of the city of Constantine, and Persian Omar was dreaming his shadow show. Do you see her there in a street by the Golden Horn, escorted by giant axemen in scarlet cloaks at night? A girl with leopard eyes, while the stars of Capricorn look down on ebony slaves with a darker light. She walks like Ruth in the fields, her face unveiled, the gardener staring ahead and afraid to look, for fear of a wanton's level eyes. The male shadows shrugged and the heavy houses shook. Where does she go tonight? Does the emperor wait? Alexis, or one of the others, standing there in his marble forest to touch the shimmering hair? Or does he merely wish to whisper his hate at the tall crusaders on the Roman road this afternoon, the sunlight flashing on armored backs? How soon will it be until they forget the Holy Land, with a prize like old Byzantium under their hand? And you, the scientific man in smoky hotel rooms at night, discussing excavation plans, the possible use of dynamite. You with your self-assurance, the security of black cigars, your condescension among the Arab bazaars. Be careful when you sift her secrets from the dusty past. She has no haste to give them up at last. Be gentle in your searchings among the dromedary's bones, your language over the field telephones. There may be someone listening, leopard eyes and ivory ear. What might she hear? The wind that blows the date palms to and fro, a little tinkling sound of camel bells, the whispering brown roots of things that grow, and women drawing water at the wells, and women drawing water at the wells. This is the last poem. Chiaroscuro. The past is a dark country of statues, and only when the mind lies very still in a vacuum created from the body's movement is there any retreat at all. Escape is possible, then, but nearly always the roads close in behind, and words are trapped like odd dead animals where dusty villages stand. More than ever, any ultimate meaning grows vague, like a song not sung but said, repeated over and over as day dies slowly, and nobody dares applaud. If it seems a refuge, it becomes a bright danger to search among the statues. No dreams of any authority there. The beauty burns in the still air and cannot move.